Better? Yeah. Okay, I'm going to talk about physics. I mean, really elementary mechanics as applied to the spread of cancer. Now, that's a point of view that we have not seen in this conference except in snatches. And I think it's a point of view worth thinking about to see if we can understand some things that you might not understand otherwise. Here are my collaborators. These are my students. A new collaborator, Adam Marcus, in Atlanta. Some people I worked on cell motility, a former graduate student now at Novartis, and some collaborators from physics department at Harvard. Okay, so I'm going to talk about glioblastoma, and it's a very highly malignant brain tumor. And what's interesting about it, from my point of view, is that it's rather simple in some sense. It's simple in the sense that it spreads. Does not spread by metastasis at all. It spreads by invasion in the brain, single cell infiltration in the tissue of the brain. It is not known to metastasize. And what I'm going to think about it from the mechanical point of view. And one of the things I'm going to think is, when cells are moving, what do they do? Well, one of the things I'm going to emphasize, and I'm going to say why, is that when cells move, they actually are doing a lot of pulling on tissue. They're contracting. You're familiar with that in the case of fibroblasts. I'm going to emphasize it quite a lot. They're moving in a deformable environment, and they deform that environment by that contraction. And so the cells affect the environment, the microenvironment of the tumor. On the other hand, cell motility is affected by the tumor, by the environment, by, in particular, the stiffness in the environment, by the alignment of the environment, as we'll see. And we're trying to formulate a theory, which is very much a work in progress, for those coupled factors. Okay, so let me just say a few grim things about glioma. Glioma is very grim. For those of you who don't know, this is what killed Ted Kennedy and almost killed healthcare in the United States. This is a... here are the salient facts about glioma, and it's untreatable because it spreads. Here is a tumor that was discovered by MRI. My friend Nino Kiyoka took out this much of the brain. This is not a mistake. He knew what he was doing, to take out a huge bit of brain in order to try to get the cells that escaped from the visible tumor. There are cells all over this place. He knew that, and he didn't get them all. No one can. And here's the new tumor, and this guy died in a year. Now, of course, taking out a big part of the brain is not practical in all cases, and it doesn't work. Chemotherapy and radiation fail, so there are lots of things. There are lots of things that lead us to try to get to a fundamental understanding and maybe look at this from a different point of view. Okay, I am going to be talking not about patients, but about an in vitro experiment, a very common kind of one. It's a 3D tumor ceroid assay in which you take a clump of tumor cells, you suspend it in a gel, transparent gel. We're going to be talking about both Metrogel and collagen, which are maybe bad candidates for representing the extracellular matrix of the brain, but they're useful. They're useful for experiments, and the ceroid grows, single cells invade, and we hope that this is going to work. And here is the central thing, is the tumor ceroid as you put it in, and these are invading cells, single cells. Now, let me tell you a little about how this grows. Here is the dynamics. This is a 24-hour time-lapse movie, and watch this guy. It sort of gets loose. There it goes. That's the bugger that makes all the trouble. There's another one down here. Okay, so that's the kind of thing we're interested in, is that invasion. Recently, Adam Marcus has been resetting up this experiment with inducible cells so we can turn off motility, turn on motility, turn on proliferation, turn off proliferation. This is a preliminary work, but speed it up. I'm not trying to get anything quantitative out of this. Here's the tumor ceroid growing. Grows quite a lot in this, and the cells invading. So that's the kind of, this is in collagen, the other one was in Metrogel. Okay, so what can you do with this? And I'm going to go through this very quickly. We've we can self-track individual cells, and we've done that. Here's some work with Andy and Dave Waitz's group, and here's an example which you can get 3D tracks, and we've done that. We've shown that the cells are biased, can be thought of as biased random walkers. And also you can look at the population dynamics, you can look at the growth dynamics of the whole bunch of growing cells. Here's the tumor spheroid in the middle, and you see you have this expanding cloud of cells, and you can analyze that. I will go through this quickly. You can say there's diffusion, there's directed motility, there's cell shedding from the tumor, that's the process I talked about before, and proliferation, and said all these things. This has been published a couple of years ago, and we can get some parameters out of that. So the result of both of those things is something that's relevant here, that we have cell shedding and we have this directed motion. It's away from the spheroid. It is not random motion. It's radially away from the spheroid. That's an interesting question. Why that? What's going on from the physics point of view? What's the mechanics of that? Well, let's talk about mechanics of the microenvironment around the tumor as it's correlated with cell invasion. What's going on? Well, the cells affect the matrix. The matrix affects the cells, and let's see what happens. Okay? Again, from the purely physics point of view. It's all F equals ma. In fact, it's all A equals zero. I mean, cells don't accelerate much. It's all F equals zero. We're doing statics. That's the kind of mechanics we're going to do. Okay, so let me just point out that I do know more than I am talking about, or I hope I do, that cells can degrade the matrix, cells can produce the matrix, but we're going to emphasize this last part, that cells can deform the matrix. And that's the thing that seems to be important in our experiments. Now, this is a beautiful collection of pictures that Dave Vader produced recently, and it shows the kind of thing I'm talking about. Here is a single cell marked with GFP, and you look, this is the collagen imaged by reflected light, and you see this wonderful pattern of this fan of cell fibers here. He put a bunch of cells on the surface, and you see these lines between them? Fantastic stuff. Now, this is the thing that got us started some years ago. I talked about this last time I was here. You put two tumor spheroids into your well, your little centimeter well, and you find that not only do the fibers get aligned and localized between the tumor spheroids, but also the cells. The cells are moving along the region between the two cells, exactly what you would not expect if there was some sort of chemotaxis going on. It's the opposite of chemotaxis. Okay? They're localized along the fibers. This, in biology, is called contact guidance. I have been unable to find any treatment I could understand of contact guidance, so we're trying to work that out, and I'll talk about that in the course of this talk. Okay, so here's an example. I hope this works. Hello, come on, you worked before. Oh, rats. Sorry. If this would have worked, you would see the cells. Let me just try one more time. Couldn't find it. Well, all right, heck with it. The cells actually do move out along the lines. This is a time-lapse photograph over 48 hours. Sorry about that. Okay, let's try to get back to our... Okay, so here is a single cell in collagen. This is the thing you've seen before, only I'm going to show it as the dynamics of it. Single cell in collagen making these fans of fibers. And those fibers, I'm going to argue, are both aligned and stiff. The stiffening of the extracellular matrix around the tumor comes from this process of the cell pulling and aligning and stiffening, and that's the theme of the remainder of the talk. Okay, well, so let me give you a short digression, and I hope you'll forgive me, but I've been thinking about this lately. We're arguing with referees about this right now. Sort of an exercise in what is cell motility. Now, the cell motility that we're actually talking about in this paper is dictyostelium, but the processes that I'm going to be talking about are important. The thing I want to emphasize is cell motility always involves cells pulling things together. How does a cell move? How does a cell move? It moves by attaching itself to some substrate, and here, in this case, via integrins attaching, say, to fibronectin or fibronectin, and pulling it together. Now, so here is my questions as a physicist. What's the physics here? The physics, you have adhesion, you have external friction, you have viscoelastic friction. It turns out, and I will tell you why I think this in a minute, at least in the case of Dicty, and I think in general, that the friction due to pulling, the actual force required to move the cell is the smallest and least interesting part of the problem. The friction against the fluid is negligible compared to what is actually happening. What's actually happening is the cell is attached either in tissue to at two ends to parts of the matrix, or in the case of Dicty, to the substrate, and what it has to do, the work goes into peeling it off of the substrate. That's where the work actually goes. And the viscoelastic effects, we think, the internal viscoelastic effects, we think, are negligible too. So we're going to try to figure out. So here, roughly speaking, this is just sort of generally what happens in cell motility. And why do I say what I'm saying? At least in the case of Dicty, these guys, Del Alamo and company, have done traction force microscopy. That is to say, they've taken a gelatin sheet, they put Dicty on top of it, they put fluorescent beads in the gelatin sheet, they've let the Dicty walk, and the Dicty moves the beads, and from moving the beads, you can back out the forces on the substrate this way by inverting the elastic equation, and here are the forces. The forces are on the scale of the friction, huge. They are like 100 piconewtons, whereas the force required to move that cell is 0.01 of that. Okay? All right, so that's the interesting point. And furthermore, the forces are distributed all over the bottom of the cell. Now, there are previous ways of looking at this. Laufenberger's group has this classic paper a long time ago, and there's a technical detail we object to, but our way of looking at things is quite different. But the important thing is that for the case of Dicty, we need to understand the distributed forces on the bottom. And when you do, you find a different kind of picture from Laufenberger's work. I mean, the point that we're making is here, that if you take Dicty and just flow fluid by it, it will peel off the substrate. So an external force will peel it off. Okay? And that's been measured by this French group. And the velocity of the fluid gives rise to a force. If you measure this force, then it gives a velocity for this contact line, this fracture, this tape peeling. Okay? And if you go down to the region of 100 piconewtons, which is what Del Alamo measured, you find you're in the range of the actual speed of a Dicty. Okay? So the peeling is the rate-limiting step. And the retraction force is supplied by myosin tubes within the cell, pulling the actin cytoskeleton together, and innovation here is to say that those actin, those forces are provided, since they're provided by myosin tubes, they're provided at constant velocity rather than a constant force, because that's the regime in which these motors are working. And in the interest of time, I'm going to skip a few things, except to say that we can fit the force pattern very well. Okay, and we can do this on a deformable substrate. And now, what that has to do with what we're interested in, which is cells moving in tissue. Well, Vernita Gordon and company actually worked on this long ago, seven years ago, in which they put fluorescent beads into a three-dimensional assay of the type that we're talking about. Here's a tumor spheroid, and you see the cells are moving, here's a single cell, and you see the beads are moving, here the beads are moving. And from this, you can back out the force exerted by a glioma, which is what we're interested in. It's much larger than Dictee, as you might expect. It's 10 nanonewtons. And this is going to be the basis of what follows. So the glioma is pulling. It attaches and is pulling on the matrix. Okay, what happens? The matrix aligns. Here's a tumor spheroid, and the matrix is all straightened out near the tumor spheroid because all those cells are pulling in. Here's another example. You have a region over which there is alignment, and then you have randomness. Okay, that's the picture. The presence of all these cells moving in aligns the matrix. Well, it's known that gliomas on a surface, for example, move quite differently on a stiff surface and a soft surface. This is soft. The other one is glass, basically. And that changes the mode of motility. And it changes the speed. It's much easier to move on stiff than here. Here's an older paper by Lowe, in which this is kind of a wonderful paper, in which you have a stiff and soft hybrid substrate, and if you have stuff on the soft side, it goes to the stiff side, it just goes right in. But if it comes from the stiff side and tries to get on the soft side, it's repelled. Won't go there. Fascinating. Fascinating. Kind of optics of cells. Here's a real-world example. I don't pretend that it's very closely related to what we're talking about, but it's known in breast cancer that matrix stiffness, the stiffness of the tissue, the actual physical stiffness of the tissue, is highly correlated with the invasiveness of the cells. Very stiff tissue is a bad sign. It leads to invasive breast cancer, and it's furthermore been related to a cross-linking enzyme which makes the matrix stiffer by sticking it together. Okay, this thing LOX. That's in this paper, which you can look at. Okay, good. Now, what do we do? Well, we need to figure out the interaction of cells with the matrix in which they move. Well, first thing we better figure out is, how do you figure out the matrix? Well, here's the matrix. It moves. Used to move. This is a sort of visualization of what the matrix might look like around a tumor spheroid. Now, I've already demonstrated to you that near the spheroid, there may be massive alignment of the fibers, because all the cells are pulling in. There are two things that happen. As we'll see in a minute, that stiffens the matrix. And the other thing that happens is that it makes highways for cell motion. Okay? Now, in order to understand that quantitatively, again, I'm going to put on my condensed matter physicist hat and try to understand the mechanics. Well, I'm going to understand collagen. Here's collagen. It's very important. I don't have to tell you that. Here's an example of confocal microscopy of collagen. Now, here's the issue. Collagen is a very complicated substance. It's very nonlinear. 10% strain, which is typical for the kinds of things we're talking about, you're way out of the linear regime. And its strain stiffens. It gets stiffer as you pull on it. You can all do the experiment. Your ear is the mechanics of your ear is governed by collagen. You pull it a little, it's nice and soft. Pull it hard, it's quite stiff. Now, I'm not proposing that you do any permanent damage. We're talking about the elastic regime. This is all reversible elasticity, but highly nonlinear. That's the point. Don't do that. Okay, right. Okay, but anyway, don't do that. And that's the thing that we're interested in. So what we do is we try first take a confocal microscope picture and reconstruct the network. I won't say how, it's a complicated procedure. And then we model the network. Now this is kind of interesting because this has been accepted this week in the journal Complexity. Is a model for networks. I'm not giving the kind of model that we heard about before. This is not an elasticity model. It is a fiber by fiber model. Why is that? There are two reasons. One is, this is very hard from the point of view of elasticity. It's rather easy from the point of view of soft condensed matter physics because these collagen fibers have a very long persistence life. Entropic elasticity plays no role here. They can be thought of as a collection of beams, just plain old-fashioned beams like engineers know everything about since the work of Euler and Bernoulli. They are cross-linked at points. Okay, so that's the kind of thing we're doing. There are two reasons why I don't want to do this by continuum theory. There are too many fields for me, and the cells are on the same scale as the mesh size of this thing, so in any case, it would be useless to do continuum physics. Okay, so let's try to do this, and I'm going to go through this very quickly because I'm running out of time. These are elastic beams. They can bend, and you impose displacement, minimize the energy. Here's what actually happens, and I can skip. I'll try to skip through as quickly as possible. This is the kind of thing that you do, and we can model the crosslinks. This is our innovation. We model the crosslinks in a crude way as simply angular springs. The nature of the crosslinks in collagen is not, in fact, known terribly well, so we use that freedom to fit, to introduce a new fitting parameter, this guy, which is the angular spring, the angular spring strength, and when you do that, you have one fitting parameter, and that fits the elastic, the linear elastic region, and if you would take all the crosslinks to be rigid, it would give it too large, and the network would be unstable if they're freely rotating. So we use the Goldilocks principle and fit them, so it's just right, and we find there's very much non-affine deformations. Elasticity there is really hard in this kind of substance, but we can fit experiments very well. Okay, so that's now alignment. The theory shows that the stiffening is related to alignment, and it's something that you all know from polymer physics, that when you untangle things or when you straighten things out or bend them, it's pretty easy. But if you get to the point where you have all the fibers aligned, try to stretch them, it's pretty hard. Individual fibers are stiff, and that's the point. So we try to do that. And so what I did, what my student Casey did, is took a network, which we measured, and then we knew from Vernita's work, we knew the strength of each cell. We have a plane of cells, and we know density on the surface of the tumor spheroid. So there's tumor spheroid here, tumor spheroid there. Are they strong enough to align the fibers? Yep, you bet they are. Okay? So it works quantitatively that we have gotten alignment of the right order. And so here's what Lynn is doing. We're trying to see if we can put a cell into a collection of fibers. This is not a very realistic network, and see how the cell contracts them. And you see it contracts them very nicely. Now, there are two ways you can put that cell in. Put it along a fiber or cross fibers. Cross fibers, it should contract a lot before it gets to the breaking stress and de-adheres. Remember, that's the important part in motility. Or if it's along a fiber, it's very easy to de-adhere because it's trying to buckle the fiber, and that's much harder. So what Nat did is figured out that the breaking time for going across the fibers is much longer than for along the fibers. And so you move faster along the fiber than across the fiber. So we have some mechanical idea of what contact guidance really is. And so what this is the thing we're chasing as our idea of the mechanics of this system. So in summary, I think I'm even on time. The idea is that tumor invasion depends, at least in part, on the mechanics, on the real live micromechanics, the microrheology, if you will, of this network of fibers, this highly nonlinear coupled network. It is a correlated process. There is a collective process here. The cells affect the matrix by aligning it. The matrix affects the cells by forcing contact guidance. Both, we think, are important. Both, we think, are important to understand motility in a situation when you have, or and in our application, escape from a glioma spheroid in our in vitro experiment. Now, of course, in the real world, there's much more going on. The microenvironment of an actual tumor is very, very much more complicated. However, we get some ideas, maybe some blue sky ideas, some probably silly ideas at this point, of what you might do to prevent this kind of escape. You want to soften up the environment, soften up the microenvironment. Okay? Now, maybe that can be done, maybe that can't be done, but it shows you an angle that you might not have thought of, for dealing with this horrible disease. Thank you.